Hey guys, welcome back to another episode of Musings. I have the lovely Mifunwi Galloway, Miffy, back on my podcast this week for an episode of Musings. So Miffy is both my business partner and a good friend of mine. She's a she was previously in almost another life. She was a professional cyclist that toured around in Europe and was paid to cycle, basically. And she's also won the ACT Businesswoman of the Year Awards before. She is currently completing a double degree while working full-time and also partner of this business while competing in AFL and at first grade level. So she's a very well-rounded individual anyway, and I really do enjoy the conversations that I have with her. And similar to Al Romero, it's the kind of conversations where I'm like, if at the very least I would like to go back and listen to these, because I think there's so much value in there, and things that between the both of us, I know I leave there with going, wow, that was really beneficial. So you know, I learned something from that. So anyway, I hope you guys enjoy this podcast with Miff. I know I did, and otherwise, well, basically you'll get stuck straight into it from my first question. All right, cool, enjoy. I think one of the things that interests me is different views on success, right? And what I mean by that is like how different people can observe what success is differently, obviously, what 100% looks like, whether we need to give 100% every single time. And if we're giving 100% in one area of our life, are we not giving 100% in other areas? Is it possible to give 100% in all areas of your life? I think that's quite interesting. And I remember a post you put up ages ago, and it was a video of you doing something on the eight iron going balls out, if you remember this one. And it was a post around giving 100%. And it's interesting knowing, I mean, I talk so much about the Enneagram, and both of us have done the Enneagram, and like complete opposite ends of the spectrum. And definitely reading the wisdom of the Enneagram was really useful as well, because it allowed me to sort of look at certain characteristics of particular types, and going through yours, I was like, yeah, like that's really common. Then going through mine, I'm like, yeah, that's really common as well. But I suppose what the benefit of doing the Enneagram and having other people around me do the Enneagram was, like, I was able to go, this is almost like putting on your glasses a little bit, and I can sort of see things the way you see things. Just a little bit, at least for me to understand that I don't have to understand everything that someone like yourself, who is opposite to me in many ways, neither good nor bad, actually does. And I'm interested to find out from you, what does 100% look like, and does that mean across the board in other areas of your life?
So I speak to that?
Absolutely. Yeah.
Okay. I think, I know 100% is something I'm not sure if we ever achieve. And that's coming from someone who values achievement. I think.
What were your types?
Individual, achieve, and loyal.
Yeah, 3, 4, 6. Was it, what order was it? Do you remember?
I think individual first.
Right.
I don't need no one.
You don't need. No. The individualist is hilarious because they're like,
I'm so hilarious.
Well, they're just like, no one understands me. This test won't get me. And they do the test, they're like,
and then they talk to another individual. This test doesn't get me.
Yeah, exactly.
You don't get me. Yeah, you don't know what I'm going through. Oh, we're exactly the same thing. Yeah. No, we're not.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
Yeah.
Yeah, so the achiever, and which you run a really strong pattern, which is really admirable. And there's healthy and unhealthy variations of that, right? But yeah, continue, please.
Yeah, I think 100% has varied. I think I became aware of the concept of 100% when I was an athlete, and I think it looked a particular way when I was an athlete. So I was just doing the one thing. It was my sport, and it was essentially my job to give that 100%. So that meant that my whole life essentially was centered around that one thing. So recovery, prehab, training, nutrition, everything was all centered around that. And I feel like that's the closest to 100% I've ever given. I think when it comes to competition and racing, that's where 100% physically would come out of, but I think is a holistic 100% commitment towards the tasks. I think that's a good example of it. I think when you come back, I don't want to say the real world, but when you come back to civilian life and you've got a job, you've got family, you've got other commitments, I find it has been quite challenging to, I don't think I've ever given that level of commitment to something since. because of when you say yes to that, it's like all the stuff you say no to. I think there's more stuff that I'd be saying no to that I don't think I'd be able to compromise on. So, you know, if I gave 100% to my job, I wouldn't have a life outside of that. I wouldn't have the friendships I do. I wouldn't do the hobbies. Like, I wouldn't play footy. I wouldn't Olympic lift. I wouldn't come here nearly as much. So I think when you have less going on, you can give 100% and you essentially have no real excuse not to be able to give 100%. Whatever that looks like. But I think the more things you have, I think it's pretty unrealistic to give 100% at something.
Mm-hmm. Mm. So for some people who run a strong perfectionist pattern, right? They strive for perfection. At what point are they going to realize, if they do, that that's going to be detrimental for them? Like, because that serves them at some point, right? Mm. People that run a perfectionist meta program, it's called, that serve them at some point, otherwise they wouldn't run it. But as we get older, we understand that nothing's perfect. So at what point then have you seen people who run that pattern either A, realize that or not realize that? Like, have you come across that situation before?
That was going to be my question, is do they ever realize it? Because if that's a pattern that they run, unless it's an issue, then that's just something they'll continue to run. So I think either you're inclined to stay in that pattern and it continues to serve you the way it has, or something significant needs to happen in your life where it changes.
Yep.
I can't think of anyone off the top of my head who I know runs a perfectionist pattern, like a true form of it. I know someone who runs quite, they're achiever as well, and they value that quite highly, and so they get quite stressed when they don't think they're doing a good enough job, or they'll just not do the task completely because they
Perfectionist pattern.
I wouldn't say it's I don't think it paralyzes them in the sense that I don't think it's a particularly strong one, but it is emphasis of, like, there is evidence of one there. I haven't really seen anyone kind of have to break that. I've seen people either run it or they don't.
Okay, yeah. That's interesting. I mean, it's something that we have to hold on to so much, because over time it becomes a part of our identity.
Mm.
And so I really do believe that I don't run a perfectionist pattern. You know me for a while. I'm happy to go, look, it needs to get done. And I remember a quote saying, if you're not embarrassed by your first product, you waited too long.
Mm.
However, there was an underlying perfectionist pattern that I did have anyway, which was, if I'm not going to do it well enough, there's no point in doing it.
Mm.
So some of my goals, I didn't think I could do it up to a standard. And so I would justify reasons why I didn't do it or procrastinate on it. Mm. And so my perfectionist pattern there was, it may not have been perfect, but it had to be good enough.
Mm.
And good enough was never a standard. And it was also good enough judged in the eyes of other people, which is out of my control.
Mm.
And so I would actually run that pattern, which is a variation of a perfectionist pattern. And it was like, when I saw that, I'm like, okay, so what I'm really doing here is judging myself based on what I'm judging other people would judge me. And that stopped me from doing something that I think I can do really, really well. Really, honestly, if I deep down dig around about it. So it's sort of interesting and going, what's it going to take somebody to be able to sort of see that perfectionist pattern and whether it's actually benefiting them anymore or not?
So two questions on that. So do you reckon you've had to develop some form of perfectionist pattern to be able to do what you're doing? And secondly, do you think everyone has some form of perfectionist pattern that they run?
I think as a meta program, to answer the second one first, I think the meta program, which offers a perfectionist pattern, is...
Here's my gift to you.
Basically, right? So that's something like, there's a spectrum. So every person is on that spectrum. And so there might be perfection in some areas and maybe not in other areas, not just across the board in their life, or that'd be debilitating. And that really comes into OCD space, right?
Mm.
But I do believe that everyone's on that spectrum.
Mm.
And so it's sort of understanding that everyone has the ability to be a perfectionist in something. Someone who has a messy house could be the best bricklayer, right? Like, just know it has to be done like this, and it can become unhealthy, but they might produce a good product, right? That's the second question. Going back on your first question, can you repeat that again, please?
Do you believe that you've had to develop some form of perfectionist pattern to be able to do what you do?
Probably subconsciously.
Mm.
At this point in time in my life, looking at it, I would go, I would become aware of my internal conversation, so my internal dialogue, and see if that pattern is stopping me from producing something, if it's actually stopping me from taking action on something. Mm. So I think once again, I sit on that spectrum. However, if I start to weigh further to one side of that spectrum, which will actually stop me from taking action on the things that I want to do, then that's me having the self-awareness to be able to see that and then ask the right questions to go, is stopping myself from doing this the right thing to do then?
Mm.
So I think I would definitely sit in some areas of my life, especially in this space, on the spectrum of a perfectionist pattern. However, it's becoming aware of when that's stopping me from actually moving forward in the things that I want to do. And that's what I probably worked on the last 18 months more than anything.
At what point then, I'm using the example at the moment where, you know, you first started doing videos on an iPhone and that's the quality it was, and now you've got this whole setup and cameras and everything like that. What's the difference between becoming a perfectionist at something? So, you know, did you end up here because of you were harnessing that perfectionist pattern, or how did you get better? Like, is improvement on the spectrum of perfectionism or pursuit of it, or how would you explain someone just getting better at something or deciding they want to do
I think it's a good question, and I've only got my opinion. I don't have the answer.
I don't have an answer.
so my opinion of that is, no, I just decided to take myself seriously.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was the whole idea. And, you know, I value you in the sense of going turning pro, right? Stephen Pressfield.
Mm.
But it was actually, there was a quote that I read in the Tribe of Mentors, which was about, I can't remember the guy's name. He's a chess player. And so he was playing a chess match against, I think it was a Russian grandmaster. And the grandmaster is like...
You said Russian grandma.
Grandma, like, yeah. Yeah,
dude, she intense was chess players.
Badass, right? Yeah, Russia, you know, you must go slower. But
the grandma.
Yeah, the grandma. So the grandmaster's like your black belt in chess.
Hmm.
And so if this American guy, I'm pretty sure he's American, let's play with that, won this match, he would become a grandmaster as well.
Hmm.
And he had an opportunity, and he went for... the knight, I think it was, or the rook, instead of going for the pawn, and that in turn became his downfall. And a grandmaster watching the match actually caught up with him afterwards and go, look, your downfall was this. You went for the ego and got the bigger piece rather than being a bit more patient and going for the pawn. And then he finished off that conversation the grandmaster did with this young guy. He goes, look, I know you want to become a grandmaster, so in order to become a grandmaster, you first must be a grandmaster. Like, good brown belts don't get black belts. Black belts get black belts. And so that was the thing for me this year that I was like, fuck it, I'm going to take myself seriously.
Mm-hmm.
And so in order to do that, I had to get proper equipment. I had to, like, stop trying to bootstrap it. And so get rid of this story of the young up-and-coming guy that's trying to bootstrap things and wait for this story and just go, nah. Invest the money. Invest the time. Learn how to do it. Stop trying to wait for people to find you or help you and just get it done.
Who'd you benchmark yourself against to be able to do that?
I probably stopped benchmarking myself against someone, to be honest with you. So it was probably, that's probably the freedom that allowed me to go, well, what would I want? It's like, well, I really enjoy there's something to listen to that's positive in the morning. And so there came the idea of mood prep. So, and mood prep was a Freudian slip in one of the seminars. I'm not sure if you were you here that time?
I wasn't here, but I heard about it.
Yeah. So I ended up saying, yeah, instead of food prep, mood prep. And I'm like, there's probably something in that. And so...
Who was there?
I think you were just sitting in the corner, just watching.
Yeah.
So, that became what is now, mood prep Monday to Friday. And so, which I'm really enjoying. And I think I also started that going, if no one listens to this, I still enjoy doing this. And I think that's been one of the biggest changes. With I've done other things of like, I wonder how people will like this, or I wonder if people will buy this.
Mm.
And it didn't really feel right, and it didn't work because I wasn't really passionate behind it. So if anything, I actually stopped benchmarking myself. And I become a bit aware as soon as I start to try and benchmark. I'm like, whoa, hang on a sec. You know, I'll still build a membership site off this because there's people that are engaging with it a lot. I mean, I'm getting people from Belgium, people from Argentina, people from, California. Like, I think America's got 13% of my downloads. So they're all sort of engaging with this, and I'll end up doing so I can work more with them. But yeah, it was the idea of when I stopped judging myself based on other people and just decided to do what I wanted to do.
Yeah. I think I might have used the word benchmark not the way I intended, but I think that's really important. Like, you stopped looking at what other people were doing and just did what you wanted to do. And I think that's, you know, we wanted to talk about success as well. I think that's like a good lead into it. But I also think, you know, doing what you're doing, I think most, like, in reality, a lot of things that anyone wants to do has already been done. So there's a framework out there to do it.
Sure.
And so you're like, cool, I want to be an influencer. What do influencers do? They have a YouTube channel. They have a mic. They do X, Y, Z. So it's, I guess it's not the content you're going to deliver. It's like, what sort of vehicles do you have to deliver your message and all that sort of stuff. Yeah, because I don't think, I can't look at you and go, he's this person. I definitely think you're going out there and doing your own thing. And it feels authentic. It looks authentic. Yeah, and I just think, okay, cool. You want to do, like, you want to influence people? Cool, they have a podcast. Awesome. Like, that's a way to communicate to people. You see people on YouTube doing the same thing. Instagram, I think, is definitely, as Instagram and Snapchat fascinate me, and they're definitely platforms I want to invest a bit more in. But yeah.
So is your question more who was my inspiration or who am I watching and seeing what they're doing sort of thing?
Yeah, kind of. I don't think I really had a point to it. I think it was just kind of words I was like benchmarking. Like, I, because in my definition, when I want to improve in something, I go, cool, who's out there doing it and who's doing it well by my standards? So I model.
Yeah, I understand.
Yeah, so it's like, did you model? Yes, no. You just went with gut.
Yeah, I probably did. I probably went more with my gut on this one. I think a really good, maybe if I could explain my influences. So, I mean, there's the intellectual influences, not many influences.
Where did you get that book from?
Yeah.
Tibetan? Yeah.
Tibetan.
Yes.
What is it? Tibetan? Davidian. Tibetan.
Yeah, good. Yeah,
thank you.
Nailed it.
So, there's definitely like intellectual influences. And then there's definitely like, call them like platform influences.
Yeah.
Okay. And so from there, I was like, what feels good and what feels right and what feels authentic or whatever the case is. And when I stopped sort of actually asking those questions and just did stuff, then it felt authentic. So it's a whole idea of like trying to be authentic is like trying to breathe. You don't try to breathe.
You just do it.
Breathe. Yeah. So the intellectual influences are definitely like Peterson, Claire Graves, Carl Jung, my coach who's Jay Headley. I'll get him on a musings coming up. The coaching room is definitely a part of that. Alice Hemelay was definitely one. Before that, I mean, Anthony Robbins was an early one. Simon Sinek, Tim Ferriss. These guys, I mean, there's probably even more that I can't think of. Ryan Holiday, you know, the Stoicism. So anything from Stoicism, Seneca. Marcus Aurelius. So these people have all been influences. Then there's definitely been female influences in there as well. I think they were actually earlier on. I probably shifted more to male influences as I got a bit older. And that's probably my own self-development, self-learning of going, well, how do I become a man? And so that's the intellectual influences. And then the platform influences. Gary Vee's a big part of that, as well as, not too sure. I think probably Gary Vee's probably been the biggest one I haven't really thought about it. So, and he's just basically just like talks about be native to the platform. And so it's been that. And then, another guy actually that I just started following on YouTube called Ryan Scribner. I've never heard of him. He posted a video and basically just talked about how to make a YouTube video that's interesting. And so I listened to that and a lot of his other ones are, and he's a, like, no offense, Ryan, if you ever listen, you're fucking boring on some level. You're just a different variation to me, but you're interesting because you're you.
Because you're boring.
Well, it's because he's not trying to be anyone else.
Yeah.
So I'm not sure if I'd enjoy catching up with a beer with him, maybe a whiskey, I don't know. But he does. Drunk. Yeah, well, yeah. But he does really well at being him. And so I think that's really good because it's when someone, you know, who is more introverted, tries to be extroverted and doesn't feel right. So, Ken Wilber is also one of my intellectual influences for sure. Ken Wilber, he founded basically Integral Theory. So, which is like a whole new, you would have heard it through the personality hackers. So, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. So they've probably been my influences of like who to model from on some level.
Mm.
And then also the gut feeling of like what feels right.
Mm.
Yeah.
So do you believe that you're on the journey to success at the moment? Whatever success is for you.
I am. Yes, in short. Yeah.
So, and in long?
In long? I'm dealing with reality as it arises much better than I used to. Yeah, I trust myself to be able to do that. And that was a big thing, is that I didn't trust myself to be able to deal with reality. And then that would put me in a position where I had to be defensive, and then knowing my personality type, I'd get angry. So being able to be more present and trust myself to deal with reality as it arises and have really good conversations and learn to really respect other people's point of views and have a healthy debate without having an argument. Yeah, I think that's enabled me to be able to stop worrying about whether I'm going to create an impact and understand that I can't not create an impact.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's a big thing for sure.
How are you going to be successful? Like, what are you going to do to ensure that to ensure your success?
Just keep doing what I'm doing. Yeah. So, I have that self-awareness and intuition. So, yeah, absolutely. But for you, what I am also interested in, because you're not interviewing me on this podcast.
No. I just flipped the table. So, I was like, hang on a minute.
Yeah. So, let's flip this job interview around. So, but I mean, like, I like the banner because that's a conversation we would normally have anyway. Mm. So, it was never meant, I never set musings up in order to go, let's just interview this person and ask 11 questions.
That's why I kept asking you questions.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. It's like, oh, this was a really good conversation, David. Yeah. So, for you, and you spoke about when you were an athlete before.
Mm.
Now, give me an idea. I have an idea, but the people watching or listening may not have an idea. When you say you were an athlete at a particular level, what level are we talking at?
So I was racing in my final year. I was racing in a professional team living in Italy. So it was essentially my paid job.
Mm-hmm.
I represented Australia a couple of times, not, you know, a Commonwealth Games or Olympic level. I never got to that.
Road bike.
Yeah. Sorry, road cycling. Yeah. I did a couple of World Cups. I got to a particular level, which I would, by my standards, probably define as like an 80-85%. I was never in the top caliber of cyclists. I was not really the one. I didn't give myself enough time in the sport to really explore what I could do,
mm-hmm.
for a variety of reasons. But yeah, I would say I was a half-baked athlete per se. I had a good chances and did well at them. It's a combination of things, and I never was great at it.
Well, I've told you before that you're not super talented.
Yeah.
You're very talented. But what I mean by that is, like, that's not to put down your talents. Mm. It's like, I'm really impressed by your hard work. Mm. And I am. And I mean that. And I've probably told you in different ways over time, you know. And I'm not the person that's always just going to throw around compliments.
Mm.
I do, but more so in the sense of, like, if I really think something, I'll tell someone, knowing that what I'm saying is not right. And so that's not a neg on your behalf. It's like, It's like watching your talent in many areas, and I've seen you play AFL now and move into other sports, right?
Scored a goal.
You did. You scored a goal in first grade in your first game. But even seeing you, because I mean, I played AFL for over a decade, right? And there's an art to that game where it takes a long time to understand the flow of that game.
Mm.
And when you can understand where the ball's going rather than where the ball is, you become on a different platform.
Mm.
And I saw you pick up that well, right? So, you probably didn't even know that you picked up that well.
Mm.
You positioned yourself in areas. And the reason why I'm pointing this out is because it's like, these are things that are unteachable. And I think you have this area in many areas of your life. I've known you for a number of years now. But what overshadows all of this is your undeniable hard work. Okay? And, you know, you got ACT. For those that don't know, ACT is like the state in which is the capital of Australia is in, Australian Capital Territory, but ACT Businesswoman of the Year. And I didn't mean to offend you the next, like, two mornings later on when I said, I don't know if you were the best businesswoman, but you had your alarm set for the next morning. You would remember, whatever, win, lose, place, whatever people want to call it, nomination or whatever, you were up the next day ready to do work. And I think that is the most important thing, and that's where you deserve it more than anyone for that reason.
Mm.
So what does it take for you to sort of have that, you know, unbridled.
To keep waking up every morning?
Yeah, absolutely.
It was funny, like, that what you've just mentioned before. I was having conversation with my dad this morning, and I've had a number of different careers and dabbled in a number of different things. And I explained to him, I'm like, I feel like I'm just building my career equity. I would define myself as incredibly useful. You can put me into any environment and chances are I will survive.
Yeah, I think that's true.
And so that's how I kind of see what I'm doing at the moment is I find ways I can be of use. And I do that because I value contribution and I value achieving. So if I'm going out there learning more things, I can achieve and do more, but I'm also more useful and then contribute more. And so, yeah, I think what drives me to get up and keep getting back on the horse, I guess, is just the possibility of doing more and being more. I know that there's so many things out there in the world you can do. And I'm only just scratching the surface on that, and I'm really keen to explore that more. But I know that involves me showing up every day and giving some level of effort. And we talked about 100% before. And again, I was having a conversation with my dad about uni. I've got 2 more assignments and I'm done my degree after 10 years. And people are like, oh my God, like it's taking you that. The either response is, oh my God, it's taking you 10 years to do a degree. Or like, why are you doing a degree? Or why, like, just finish it. And there's a variety of reasons it's taking me so long to do it. But I was talking to him about submitting an assignment, and I'm like, and he's a cyclist, so he was training and riding a bike, and we're talking about uni and his bike, and he goes, I haven't trained much this week because of work and XYZ. You know, I've put in a couple of sessions, and I was like, Dad, you know what? Sometimes that has to be good enough. And he goes, no, it's not. And I just started thinking about it. I'm like, okay, A, that's where I get it from. That's me. Okay, well, awesome. Well, and then I was like,
we need to talk to you about
this. Yeah. And it got me realizing, I'm like, sometimes things just have to be good enough. If I went in there going, I'm going to give 100% to each assignment over the last 10 years, there would have been a fuckload that I missed out on. Like, I'm going up to see a client compete in Sydney tomorrow, and I have a uni assignment due next week that I'm not even close to finishing. So I'm putting myself between a rock and a hard place to do really well in that assignment. But, you know, I wouldn't miss seeing my client compete for the world. It means so much to them to be competing. And so it means a lot to me as a coach to do that too. So it's a constant struggle that I've struggled. I mean, I'm choosing the struggle, but I find that recently I've been having to decide between, you know, saying yes to work or to professional commitments and then saying no to personal stuff. And that's a hard balance a lot of the time. And I was talking to someone else who's going through a similar problem, and they're like, yeah, I feel like I can either work or I can train. I can't do both at the moment. And I feel like you can go through waves of that. Obviously, there needs to, like, for me, there's an end point. I've got 2 subjects left, then I'm done, and I don't have to deal with that anymore until I decide to study again. But yeah, I feel like in those situations where you have so much on, that 100% at something, I'm not quite sure it's achievable. I haven't seen anyone do that well. So if you're doing, yeah, I haven't seen anyone do 100% across all areas of their life. I think, you know, I feel like it's kind of like me, an athlete at the moment. I just want to be good at everything. And so I'm kind of like 80% okay at everything at the moment. I'm actually cool with that.
Yeah. I mean, that's sort of like talking before where I mentioned about, you know, talented or super talented and that sort of stuff, and sort of pull you down a peg on that. Just to clarify, your hard work is a talent, right? And so that's where I'm bringing that forward. It's like, in fact, if our generation had more of that rather than just relying on talent, like, we would have a completely different fucking generation and world living in.
Well, it's a skill as well. Like, I was thinking it before, like, I went to a French school. So I did my education till year 10 in French. So I learned a language, and I also learned German during that time. So I learned the skill of language. So when I went and raced overseas, I picked up Dutch and I picked up Italian because I lived there. Sport is a skill. Hand-eye coordination. I can implement that, anything. Training.
Strength is a skill.
Yeah. Learning uni is a skill. I learn how they ask questions in assignments and what the expectations are. I don't even... I hope my uni lectures aren't looking... I rarely read the course material. I look at the assignment, look at the marking criteria and go, I know what I need to do to get good grades.
What is it
grades.
That they want?
Yeah. And so even in my corporate job, I'm like, okay, I might think this, but I know this is what the expectations are for this. So to meet XYZ criteria, this is what I need to do. So I feel like I've figured out skills and in a variety of different areas, and I think that's maybe what's lacking is the ability to not see a skill set like going, cool, I've learned this sport and that skill set is only applicable to that sport, going, how can I apply that skill set in a broader sense?
Yeah, which is undervalued, right? People like this having a specific skill set is crucial. Like, I'm not against, you know, a particular brain surgeon, right? Mm. It's like, oh, you know, but I'm also a podiatrist. It's like, well, can I just get the brain surgeon, please? Just the brain surgeon,
right? Why are you looking at my feet? Why are you looking at my brain?
Yeah. So I understand in that realm there's definitely, but for, I think there's a certain level of undervalue for people to have this broad sense of being able to deal with just about any situation that arises. It moves into being independent and interdependent, right? On your codependent patterns. And, you know, it's sort of going, what kind of desire could be in us in order to do that? Because, I mean, like for me right now, I'm not working hard. I know I'm not working hard, right? But what am I meant to do? Like I've sat back on this and thought about it and realized that I'm thinking too much about it. I just need to do it. And it's like, okay, well, here's some parameters that I can change up now. And you mentioned before around your father being like, oh, you know, it's not good enough. And like, dude, life conditions, right? And this is one of the things, the term life conditions has allowed me to understand it as a model to go, when your life conditions shift, and me house sitting, I didn't really put this into attention for so much, but until the last probably 9 months, probably even less, my life conditions changed every month. Every single month changed. And that's where I just was completely unstable. I had no certainty. And so then I come to work and there's no certainty, and then it'll just drive me crazy. And so for me now, it's like, okay, how can I settle my life conditions a little bit? So there's more certainty there. And then that'll allow me to actually sort of be, work harder. And I think setting this business up, I probably worked harder than I am now. I'm probably working smarter 100% now than I did then. However, it's like, okay, I can probably turn this up a little bit. And I think when I say that, it's like not putting myself down as like, fuck, man, you need to work harder. Mm. Like you're being a piece of shit. It's like, no, I can just go to, I can go from 6 to 7 now. Let's do that. Let's just add a couple of extra hours here this next couple of weeks, not just 1 week, next couple of weeks, and see if there's a different return on that. Mm. Oh, every day between 2 and 4, I'm like chilling out and spending more time on social media and not actually working, and then picking it back up again and then feeling bad about, right, okay, well, what can I do between 2 to 4? That negates that situation happening.
Mm.
It's like, oh, well, I could probably actually just have a quick nap, or I could use that time to then have a coffee and read a book or whatever. And so it's sort of like auditing myself is probably the easiest way to look at it. So, yeah, which I remember Mitch Pike saying a long time ago, he's like, we audit ourselves when things go bad, but we don't audit ourselves when things go well. And it's like, that's what we should be doing.
Mm.
How often would you say that you audit yourself then?
I guess I do in some variety every day because of my achieving, my desire to achieve. I look back on my day quite frequently and go, what did I do today? What boxes did I tick? Mm. Or what kind of went about my day? So, yeah, I think I do it quite regularly. It might not be an in-depth, like, emotional check, like, how are you feeling and all that sort of stuff, but it's definitely...
Type 3 is definitely don't do that.
No. Any working to myself? Fuck, don't mean to talk about that.
Say that again?
Nothing.
Working for yourself?
I said, inner workings of myself, don't make me talk about that.
It'd actually be very interesting to talk about, Miffy.
Yay, cogs and... like moths flying around in there, like dust ball. I don't know. Something
yeah,
like that.
I'll actually come back to the 2, 3, 4s when you finish. No, you find it fascinating.
Yeah, I had two questions pop up when you were talking just before. You know, when I said to my dad, you know, sometimes good enough is just good enough. And he's like, no, it's not. At what point does that sometimes good enough is good enough become a cop-out to not doing great things? Or
I think it is a cop-out. I think it's for a lot of men. I'm not sure at women. I think Brené Brown talks about this well in relation to shame. But I think for a lot of men, it's shame.
Mm.
Right? So... they don't know it's shame because they don't know how to label it.
Mm.
But it's like, you know, potentially a male may feel like, what does your dad do for work again exactly?
He's a radiologist.
If he gets something wrong, that's fucking not good enough, mate.
Yep.
Right? So that's the thing is like, well, I carry that over to other areas of my life.
Mm.
And so as a radiologist, of course, he should be cycling better.
Mm.
And so I think there's certain things like if he, let's say hypothetically in his, I don't know this to be true, but this is how I observe it. In his early stages of being a radiologist, he got something wrong.
Mm.
It's like, mate, that's not good enough. And so there could be shame around that. It's like the person now has an issue with their life because of his mistake.
Mm.
Therefore, any mistake that I make is not good enough.
Mm.
And not giving 100% is a mistake.
Mm.
I know when we had our spy in the sky over in Colorado at the moment, one of our clients is over in Colorado and he's worked in the forces for a long time. In a team workout, if in his team of 3 or team of 4, if everyone didn't know what they were doing, in a team workout in the gym, he would freak out. Because at, like, let's say, going through all the forces, whichever forces he was in at the time, if his team doesn't know everything, someone dies.
Hmm.
And so that relates across. And so I think for a lot of people, it is a cop-out until we recognize the shame we may have around something as a male. I'm sure it's the same for females. And I think a lot of... I see more perfectionist patterns in females than I do in men. I have to be honest. That's what I see. It's not that men don't and women do. It's I see more in the feminine than I do in the masculine.
Yeah, I feel like the perfectionist is also... I think it should be spoken to about the need to control things as well. So, like, I see both of them. Where there's one, there's been the other. And the people that I can think about off the top of my head... because it is element of control. If something's perfect, they know exactly what's going on with it, sure, and they can control that. And I think that's more of a feminine quality, the need for structure, systems, and knowing what's going on in the meadow and everything like that.
Yeah, I don't know. I probably don't see that exactly the same. I see a lot of order from the masculine.
Yeah.
And I mean, that's the whole idea of like the walled garden, right? And also Mother Nature is chaos, whereas the father is God, which is order. And so that's where...
Could it be the female's attempt to try and create that for themselves? I'd say
so, probably, yeah. Yep. So I'd just say that from my understanding that the chaos and order, if you were to use those terms, that the masculine would be order and the feminine is chaos. Oh,
definitely. Yeah, yeah, I agree with that. I'm just thinking of the people that I can think of and I'm like, nope, no, they definitely do that.
Yeah, for sure. And I mean, that can come from so many childhood patterns as well.
Yeah, of course.
So like if, you know, for example, like an older sister, it's like you should know better. Right, as an older sister, and so she's like, fuck, I should know better, so I have to control everything, otherwise I get in trouble. And then
I clearly didn't get told that.
I mean, I'm the youngest of four, right?
Yeah. So well, she's only 3 minutes older, so
yeah, well, she should know better.
Yeah.
I'm not sure if Bron, I don't know if Bron listened to this.
She's currently on a beach in Italy.
Oh, is she in Italy?
Yeah.
Oh, very good. So that was one question. When does it come a cop out? What was your other question?
Can't remember off the top of my head.
Cool. So 2, 3s, and 4s. Let's move on to back onto the Enneagram. So
what are 2, 3s, and 4s?
Fuck, the Enneagram is so fat. So it's psycho-spiritual.
Yeah.
Right? Especially the levels of development. The first 4 to 5 are all psycho.
Yeah.
Like psychoanalytic, for example. Whereas the next 4 to 5, so the middle one's more so psycho-spiritual. So the bottom 3 development is psychology, effectively. Then it's like a spiritual, and then it's spiritual. And so the Enneagram unfolds into this amazing sort of map of understanding reality, and especially understanding ourselves. But there's so many triads. So there's 9 types, and there's so many different triads, from assertive triads to like there's one which is like where people are blocked. So there's the instinctive block, which if you can imagine is gut. Then there's the feeling block. And then there's also the thinking block, right? And I'll expand on that in a moment. But type 2, 3, and 4, type 2 is the helper, type 3 is the achiever, and type 4 is the individualist. And they're blocked on feels, right? And so 2s are...
Yeah, the feels.
Yeah, 2s can often be blocked in feelings of themselves because they're often helping... And I've done this to you a lot, actually, which is interesting because type 2 is my third. It's my third wing, or my you know. But it's like, let me help. Like I can probably help with something, you know. And but I've seen it in a bunch of other people as well. It's really, especially in our industry, which is full of helpers, right? And so the type 2 is like, I don't think I've done this to you, but it's what they can do if they're unhealthy is that they neglect their own health to save someone else, right? And that's how they get love. Right. And so they're often blocked on their own feelings. Type threes can be, they'll neglect it in order for achievement. Right. But at the same time, if somebody is sort of, if they're unhealthy and someone is kind of not giving them what they want, then they'll go into themselves. Whereas a type 4 is often wanting to be found. And so they're so into themselves that they don't understand other people. And so that's where it's really can be, yeah, so interesting as it unfolds. And it's neither, none of this is good nor bad. It's just different, like, levels of development. So that's where it's talking about models. It's both a vertical model and a horizontal model. And yeah, so it's a really good model for that. But yeah, it's really interesting seeing how they're all blocked on feelings. And then the other ones are blocked on, you know, so the peacemaker, that's like Mick, runs a strong peacemaker.
It makes sense.
He's going through a fantastic journey of understanding himself, and he's doing really well. And for those that don't understand, Mick's one of our coaches, and he's been a mate of mine for 8 years. And so, but they can they're often blocked on their gut, right? Their instincts. But he's both, he will go internal or external. So he's in middle of that and going, oh, should I or should I not? And then if something doesn't feel right, he will then seclude into himself.
Yeah.
And then if everyone's happy, then he's happy to go forward because everyone's at peace, and so I can go forward. Yeah, so it's very quite fascinating sort of seeing that unfold and understanding it more than just here are the type, you know, the big five personality traits.
Mm. Mm. Yeah, and I definitely see value in learning about that to be able to, I guess, I see it that we're all on this earth to contribute and work with each other to do whatever it is we want to do. And so I think I see a great deal of value in people at least being aware of this sort of stuff. I was talking to, again, in the conversation I had with my dad just before about managers and management, and a hell of a lot of issues and things, a hell of a lot of issues could have been avoided or, I guess, communicated and worked through better. And organizations could be doing a hell of a lot more if people took the time and effort to acknowledge this and also implement it. There's been situations in my workplace, I guess, this week where if you look at my patterns, things have... I've been communicating in particular ways where it would have put me to an unhealthy level in those areas. And I find, you know, you said my numbers, is that what you call them? My levels?
Types.
That's the one. I'm like, types. What's the unit? My types are blocked on feels. I'm like, when I need to get shit done or when I'm in those sorts of situations, I don't go into feels. I dissociate completely from myself to be able to get tasks done, whether it's for work, whether it's for uni, whether it's for training or anything like that. I mean, training, I do need to go back into myself, but sometimes it's literally buckle up, just get this done. Doesn't matter if you don't want to do it today, just keep rolling. And so I definitely see how I can be blocked in those. And I've gotten better at unblocking myself from it. But yeah, there's definitely times. And I think the workplace for a lot of people is a challenge in those sorts of areas. You can do a great lot of work outside of that on yourself and unblocking, but when you've got other people you need to work and collaborate with who might trigger you and unknowingly because they're just unaware of this sort of stuff, then yeah, I think it makes for a challenging environment to be in.
Yeah, it's sort of the levels of integration. So that's running like a strong type 3 pattern, right? Just to get things done, and then it's a typical thing to disassociate sort of, and then here's what you wanted me to do. You know, is this good enough?
And I can't talk to you for 3 days.
Yeah, right. And yeah, well,
here's my love. I can't have it right now.
Yeah. So, and that's where when I speak to you, and you're like, oh, maybe you might find that a senior person isn't sort of acknowledging that you're working, and you're like, what's the point? But that's a strong type 3, which is fine. It's like, well, what the fuck's the point of this? You know, and so it's interesting.
Unless I see personal achievement in it and I'm going to motivate myself. Like, I can definitely work for stuff where no one gives a shit, but it's going to be something I'm invested in. Yeah. If I'm not invested in it, then I'm definitely doing it for someone else.
Totally.
Yeah.
And you know, it's so interesting sort of seeing these levels of, you know, integration into healthier levels rather. And I think that's powerful. And I think that's why it's like my connected coaching seminar is like, okay, let's look at how different people communicate. And these are some models to use to be able to see how people communicate. If they're more visual, auditory, internal dialogue, or how they have, you know, it's all these sorts of things. That's the connected coaching, right? Because people don't want to look at themselves. If that sparks their interest enough, come spend 3 days with me. And we're going to go through a lot of other stuff. And it's not about other people. It's about you. And you'll leave there not as a better coach, you'll leave there as a better person. I know that's the case because I've spoken to
everyone.
You're
trying to sell me a seminar.
I'm trying to tell any person who's interested that this is what they should be doing, whether it's with me or whatever.
Yeah.
Is that you want to be able to show up better in the world, then you better go in and you better face some things inside of you that are ugly and uncomfortable. And the thing about it is that, and I love this, I just read it, Gudriv, I don't know how he say his name, but he was effectively the guy who was one of the pioneers of the Enneagram. At the turn of the 20th century. And he was like, suffering is the last thing human beings want to let go of. You know, and it's like, well, let's debate that. But I think it's a fucking great point because it's so intertwined into so many people. So you don't understand what I've been through. It's so in depth of people's personalities and their identity of how they see themselves. It's like, well, this is my story. It's like, yeah, I know. Yep. Yeah, that was your story of how you told yourself and the meanings that you made from it. Yeah, what's next? Come on. And so it's so interesting seeing that sort of stuff and if we're willing to let go of our suffering in order to become a better contributor in the world.
And like I had a stab at you selling your seminar just before, but I honestly think that we're talking about like being like, what is 100%? And I think if you want to be 100% coach, let's just use that example because we're in that industry, then sure, learn the technical side, but you need to invest in this shit too. Like, you know, you're in Sydney in June 9th. Yes.
Yes.
Yep. Cool. Oh, because you tried to sell it to me earlier.
I didn't tell you the date. Good job, my fun.
Yeah, good. There's also a whiteboard next to me. So people need to invest in that sort of stuff. Otherwise, you'll need just to be happy with 80% coach. I mean, I'm not disregarding the technical skills. Like, that's something that I know I need to work on and I'm fascinated by. The human body and how it moves is something that I'm really interested in. And I know that that knowledge is going to be useless unless I know how to communicate it and communicate it to a variety of different people.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. So the overarching characteristic of a coach is adaptability and behavioral adaptability. And if you don't have that, you're not a coach.
I was about to say, we know a few coaches that I would probably say don't have that.
Well, I don't think, it's also not in fashion at the moment, whereas bikinis are. And so it's sort of like this idea that, you know, and this, that's not a criticism of other coaches either.
No, God, no.
And
probably just starting on their journey and they don't even know this stuff yet. I mean, we probably started off as that.
Yeah. Oh, I 100% I did. Yeah. I was a cowboy. My goal was to make someone vomit. That was 100%. You saw my Cert 4 that I got 10 years ago, right? And before that, I was coaching. I had a traineeship.
Yeah.
And so, like, I've been through it all. And so I see it now and I'm like, yeah, okay. The levels of development. And we cannot rush the levels of development. We can't fast track it. We can only unblock it. Mm. It's like trying to speed up a river. You just unblock the river.
And you spend time there as well. Like, that's one thing that I've come to realize too, is I kind of didn't just go wake up one day and go, oh, I'm confident coaching. I remember when I would have to look at the workout the night before and go, oh my God, how am I going to coach this? And I'd look on the internet and go, okay, this is how I can coach this movement. Now I just rock up, go, okay, cool, that's a workout. Totally. But not because I've given less shits about it, but it's because I've been around long enough now that I'm like, okay, I know the basics. And you have a good relationship with the clients going, okay, this client needs X and this client needs Y. And that's something that you don't fast track either. It's something that you just, by spending time in the industry, or time doing anything, like spending time on your craft, you just get better at it. If that's what you want to do, you just keep waking up every day and doing the same thing.
You absolutely
not do. Same thing, but learning.
Well, I mean, if you want to get good at something, you do it.
Yeah.
You do it again and again and again and again. And so, you know, our industry is full of dolphins, right? And it, like,
sorry, I'm in the middle of my marketing assignment. So I was talking to a client before going, anything anyone says to me right now, my immediate thing is to visualize it. So I'm picturing an industry of dolphins, like literal dolphins.
Yeah. So, I mean, like they're really intelligent, but they can't communicate to humans.
Yeah. Okay.
They can only communicate to the exact same thing they are. And so there's a lot of trainers that go, this person's not listening. It's like, mate, you're not coaching, right? You're not adapting your ability to be able to meet that person where they are, you know? And so that's where you talk about different skill sets and you know, rocking up and then getting comfortable knowing different movements with different people and how to go, okay, well, this squat with this person should look like this. It looks different with that person. And in the beginning, it's like, I don't know what it is. Later on, it's like, oh, they just need to have their feet wider. And then maybe they shouldn't back squat. Maybe they should front squat. That's probably actually better for them because they're not going to compete ever. They don't need to do that. They just need to garden. And so we start to remove all these rules that we put on there to begin with and start to adapt to go, oh, right, well, look, let's just do that then. And they're like, yeah, that feels much better. You're like, great.
Yeah, it's like you're mentioning the rules. And that's, I'm a big believer that you need to learn to play the game, whatever game it is you want, to be able to have an influence in it. And that's why I'm also one of the reasons why I'm doing my uni degree. I don't care what people say about it. A lot of people, especially if you want particular jobs, they look that you have a piece of paper. And that piece of paper means something. I'm like, okay, I'll play that game. I'll get the piece of paper. Mm-hmm. And then what am I going to do with it? How am I going to use it? Same with coaching. Mm-hmm. We need our Cert 3 and 4. I can't remember much of either of those.
I got a hand of mine, basically.
Yeah. But, you know, we do what we do based on the knowledge we've gone out and taught ourselves.
Yeah.
Oh, sorry, that we've gone out and sought. Absolutely. That. And so, yeah, I think it's play the game, you know, do your time and then start to influence.
Yeah. When I think it's when you stop trying to influence, that's when you make the biggest influence, right? And a lot of people are...
what do you mean by that?
Well, say a hypothetical list. Like I'll try and use... I'm digging around here, but I'll try and use myself an example. All right. I want to motivate people, so I'm going to start motivating people, right? It's like, nah, just fucking live your life.
Lead by example.
And just, just be the person that you would prefer to have in your life and then, you know, what do you know? Mm. And all of a sudden you become an inspiration. You don't get up at what time in the morning you get up at and train and do some work before the world fucking asks things of you because you're trying to inspire someone. Mm. And that's why it's inspiring,
mm.
right? And so, yet documenting that, people go, oh, no, I don't want to do that. It's, you know, it's the same thing. It's just like, well, documenting that actually is quite interesting.
Mm.
And so your ability to document that on a Snapchat or something like that allows us to be able to go, right, okay, maybe I should be working harder. Because there's some people that yeah, 100% they should.
It's a fine line because, I mean, I had 2 weeks ago, I was up 3 a.m. doing uni assignments. And part of me was like, oh, I could take a photo of my computer right now going, yep, up at 3 a.m. doing uni. Then I was like, A, no one gives a fuck. B, I wasn't organized enough to get this done and not have to be up at 3 a.m. And then I was like, I'm not actually not that important. Like, why does anyone matter that I'm up at 3 doing uni? It's my own choice. And
that's great
but
insight.
But then I realized people would do that. And I guess part of it, like through those times as well, I'm like, I think part of me was just seeking to someone to go like, that's impressive. You're doing a great job. Because I wasn't getting that at the time. And I was like, that's where people turn to social media for that sort of stuff. So I think for me, like I don't film when I get up every morning or most of my training. I don't post what time. I just post my training.
Yeah.
Because I feel like the people who know and the people who I want to know without me saying anything. And yep. I think, you know, if I made the decision that I wanted to influence more people and actively do that, then I might share a bit more of that. But at the moment, that's kind of, I feel like I'm very in my types at the moment.
Yeah, probably. You're just working through. I mean, I observe things, right?
Yeah. And I think, you know, yeah, my story is my story. And I do get that it does influence people. I have people tell me like, oh, you know, it's really great you see you doing this or XYZ, you're really good at this. And I'm just like, oh, it's just stuff that I do.
Yeah.
Then, yeah, you don't realize that sometimes what you do is what also makes you really special.
Yep. So, I mean, firstly, that's really good self-awareness that a lot of people wouldn't admit to, right? Going, oh, I actually am not getting this right now, which is something that we need as a human need. And then I'm trying to seek that through other forms.
Mm.
And so I had to, like, do something similar with a lot of my actions and behaviors. And this is why the conversation of intent / motivation, depending which way you want to look at it, but intent is crucial. So the behavior is I'm posting something on social media and I'm going to tell myself it's to inspire other people. But what the real intent is to get validation.
Can you imagine if everyone made an Insta post and actually captioned why the fuck they're putting it on there?
Mm.
Like, I try to find a photo to go with something that I want to say. Like, I don't have a photo of me looking hot and be like, oh, my God, like, it's Monday.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm like, you just look hot in this and you just wanted to post it.
Well, that's Instagram, right?
Yeah, yeah, but
I get
like,
it.
I don't use it as that. I use it as a way to blog and to share feelings.
Sure. Yep.
Which is probably not, it's definitely not what Instagram's, I guess, supposed to be for. Like, use a blog, use Tumblr, or use something else. But
Yeah. That's where attention is.
Yeah.
And the other question is, if you did post more, let's say, provocative photos, or any, whatever, would you...
It's like, provocative photos of what?
it's not in your decision to make that, right? It's somebody else's. That's the thing. And I'm not saying you shouldn't. I'm saying that's what people do. Go, oh, they don't think you're attractive, then I won't like their photo.
Oh, but it's, yeah.
So what I'm getting at here is if you had you post more provocative stuff on there, would you get more followers? I would say yes. Would that... What's the intent behind it, though?
Yeah, definitely. Right? And, you know, we've spoken to people before who have a huge following, but they can't sell stuff. Like, Instagram likes, you know, at the end of the day, sort of mean nothing. Like, when I post, I definitely just use it as a diary. And if people get, you know, something from it, then that's great. But I'm first to admit it's a selfish platform. I'll think about it. I'll write and might not post for a week or two because I've had stuff going on in my life. And then I'll still feel the need to write about something. And that's just where I share it. Mm. But it's interesting you say, like, if I put, you know, half-naked photos of myself up there, it's not like, hey, this is me looking hot. Although half-naked photos definitely do get more likes. I get, like, some people, they won't like any of my shit. Photo me the top off, like.
And top, like, off.
Oh, no. Top on, yeah. Shirt off. Sports bra. Yeah, and it's like, okay, well, that's just kind of accept. I guess we'll talk about playing the game and going, cool, that's the game. People are just going to do that. And that photo might get attention. If they read the caption, good. Like, yeah.
Yep. Yeah, so talk about sort of Instagram. The post that got the most likes of mine recently was a text. And it said 76% of males commit suicide.
Yeah.
Right? Not 76% of males commit suicide.
Oh, God! I just...
76% of suicides are male. Oh, Jesus.
Oh, God.
Yeah, that's not good. So, light of the bad thing. Ugh.
Remember that time I talked about Stalin?
Yeah, good Stalin, my story. So, that got the most traction, right? And that's because it was blunt. It hit people in the emotions and went from there. Mm. Now, my post before that was actually about strong men.
Yeah.
And I had someone correct me say strong people. Right. And I said, no, my conversations,
you're actually talking about men.
I'm talking to men.
Yeah.
Yeah. And this is the thing. It's like,
you're a man talking to a man.
Absolutely. Yeah. And we need to remind men to do this. We need to remind men, like, no, be strong.
Mm.
In fact, even be dangerous, but be moralistic and be virtuous.
Mm.
And that's not to say. And so my, Gina, my girlfriend today said, she goes, okay, have you seen the ones? And she wasn't against my point at all. We talk about all this stuff all the time, but she goes, do you agree with the quote saying, strong women will intimidate weak men? Mm. And I'm like, absolutely.
Mm.
Yeah, they're not even men. They're not. Strong women will intimidate boys.
Yeah.
Absolutely they will. And so we should definitely tell our women to be strong. Mm. Absolutely. We need more of that. So yes, the thing is strong people, but I'm not going to filter my message to all of the genders.
Yeah.
And I say all that just because, I want to speak to men directly and I'm going to do that.
Yeah, and I think, if we talk about quotes, then strong men will attract strong women and strong women will attract strong men.
Mm-hmm.
If you attract your mirror.
If they're healthy.
Yeah. So it's, they'll intimidate people who aren't men.
Yeah.
But imagine if we're all strong.
Exactly right. And a good relationship is like a wrestling match, right? It's not this...
visual.
Yeah, for sure. Like it should be. It should be this sort of wrestling match of like, how can we get the best out of each other?
Yeah.
And even you and I in business, I think we've definitely done that.
Mm.
Right. But... like my point around that was, imagine this: if I said trans people, right? Like if my message wasn't to strong men, if it was to strong trans,
wouldn't nearly have the impact.
Well, not only that, no one would have fucking said hashtag or asterisk strong people. No one would have fucking corrected me. No one would have corrected me if I said strong women.
Mm.
It was only because I said strong men. I'm like, doesn't that give you a bit of an insight of what's going on right now?
Mm.
Right. And so it's like, yeah, it's a really interesting space. And that was my most liked post recently. Mm. Which was interesting. I was like, I post about men. And I got that sort of comment. And by the way, the girl who actually sort of corrected or whatever you want to, she was lovely. Like we talked in the messages and, she's fantastic. I got all, we had a great conversation. And she's like, sorry if I, and I'm like, no, you didn't offend at all. I'm like, that's good. I like that banter. Thank you.
Yeah.
So I welcome that. Not as in I'm like, how dare you, it's just like, oh, well, my conversation's for men.
Yeah. And it's like, at what point can you not say what you want to say? Like you wanted to say that. At what point do you have to, start manipulating what you say to please the masses?
Yeah. No, I'm not going to do that.
Yeah.
No. But the other thing, it didn't put anything down.
Mm.
That was the other thing. So.
But what if it did?
Then I think that's something that we got to look at. Yeah, absolutely. For sure. If it was, if I said, I worded it very deliberately.
Mm.
I didn't say...
I know you with your words. I have no doubt about it.
Yeah, absolutely. I didn't say strong men intimidate women.
Mm.
No, because I don't think that's true. I think strong men can empower strong women.
Right? I find them attractive.
Yeah, absolutely. And so, and for me, I don't want a fucking pushover girl. And like, I don't want that. And so, like this... there's conversations I have, like, where I'm like, even with team members that I've had in the past, I'm like, no, like, have a conversation and speak forward your truth, right? Because I don't want you just to push over because I have an opinion.
Mm.
No, you're a human being and you have thoughts. Put it forward. Let's talk about that because I want to hear what they are so that you and I both leave this conversation better people.
Mm. See, I look at the practicality of that. Like, I see it in... our environment, I think that's super important. I think that's why we have the team that we have, because that's encouraged. I look at workplaces and, sometimes you just have to go with the flow. Sometimes you can't speak your opinion, and that's just the nature of it. And so it's a great skill to be able to learn when to share what's on your mind and your opinions and when you just keep the pace.
Totally. And I mean, that's really true. I think, I've had to learn that even in my small space of going, no, I've got to shut up here.
Hmm.
What
value is that going to add? Am I just getting something off my chest, or is this going to contribute value for both of us?
Yeah. And even asking for, like, we've had plenty of conversations and I'm like, earlier on, I'm like, well, blah, 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 blah. And you're like, fuck off. Just in, whereas later on,
oh, yeah,
I was
don't
like,
"Don't I still do that?"
Well, no. I'm less forward on it. I learned to go, "Would you like my thoughts on it?"
Mm.
And that gives you space to go, "Actually, I am interested to hear what you got to say." Or,
but I'm a mismatcher, so I'll go no, and then I'll be like, "Oh wait, yeah, I do."
Well, yeah, usually no, and then or if I just let you be, and then you come up and you go, "Oh, can you watch my next set?" or something like that. And so, really, it's the other person's job to look for permission. But I suppose in a lot of settings, there are men who are afraid of women to take their role. They don't think they can do it, and it's just like, no.
What do you mean by afraid?
Well, they.
Oh, sorry. What are they afraid of? That's what I meant.
That their belief structures aren't true, right? That. That's at a core.
Yeah.
Okay. At a core, that their belief structures of men are leaders and women are followers, or whatever it may be, will fall apart, and that they're actually vulnerable and weak, and so
That's even a possibility for them.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. And so that's difficult, and that's something we have to navigate. But just putting 50% female CEOs like that next week is actually going to do a disservice. We have to move through the levels of development, and we have to make sure that the right people are in the right seats, regardless of what's between their legs, or regardless of what they choose to put between their legs either. And so the transition's important to have females working in the workplace and playing important roles or playing higher paid roles or whatever. But it's sort of like expecting that to happen. So I see 60 Minutes did a segment recently with Jordan Peterson, and it was fucking embarrassing, right? And they had a lady on there, and she's like, 16% of CEOs are women. She's like, that's appalling. It's like, it's probably better than 10 years ago. Well, let's make sure it's better, probably more even in another 10 years, if it needs to be. But what did you want? 50-50? Like that? Like, no, there's a shift. Just continue the shift.
Yeah, and I think it's also very generational. Like, I'm looking into that for particular reasons at the moment, just generations and how that, what the behaviors and thought processes are around then. And it's going to be it's a hard slog to change, like an organization with a huge history that's predominantly male dominated and has worked like that. You can't change that tomorrow. Like, I know that my experiences, there's a couple of industries that are like that, and you could put a really strong female in there who would be a great leader, but they're not going to see the top because of an existing structure and one that has a lot of heritage and a lot of older generations in it. I think there's more opportunities if we look at younger organizations and younger people to create that, and then we'll see the onflow of that. Like, we'll see the Zuckerbergs and all that sort of stuff being even more powerful, influential than they are now in a few years' time, but that shit takes time. Yeah. We've still got to, weed out the old and crusties before we actually get there. You know, people who are stuck in those belief systems and they actually just don't want to change it, and that's completely fine. Like, what are we to go, you have to change your belief system that you've had for 80-odd years. You know, I think it's much better for everyone to go, I respect that. And you can try... influence it via education, or, you know, by showing them, or they might just not change, and then, you know, that's it. Like, just move on. Like, instead of bashing your head against a brick wall trying to change something, what can you influence?
Yeah, it's also like we're seeing shifts in some work like forces. That's like, it must be 50% this and 50% that, and it's like, look, that's fine as long as we're not... No, it's not necessarily fine. What it should be...
No.
Well, it's not... Yeah. I shouldn't say it's fine, because I don't necessarily agree with it, and that's my honest opinion. If it happens to be that the women meet those standards, then that's fine. That's fine. I don't give a shit.
I wouldn't want me trying to get something from the top of a fire truck and trying to save someone from a burning building. I'm not tall enough.
Right.
Like, and I'm a female, but I'm literally just not tall enough.
Sure.
So, cool. Then I'm not fit for that job. Yeah. And yet you want 50-50? Cool. Most women are my... I'm average, mind despite you, being tall. I'm
little Nat Ingram.
Yeah,
she's a great little firefighter from all accounts. But she,
yeah,
like,
definitely.
The thing is, like, should she be one? Sure, fucking. Yeah, she did all the absolutely 100%.
Yeah,
I don't care what's between legs, and I promise you, I think if like I,
she's a great example of someone who's worked for it.
Absolutely,
like, you know, she had all the odds stacked against her. If you were to talk about, you know, size and height.
Yeah, but it, like, I can think of this. If I had a choice of her and a lot of men that I'm thinking of,
yeah,
to save me from
it. Oh, not.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
100%. And so I talked to my girlfriend today about, there's a movie called Red Pill. I haven't seen it yet. It's about effectively men's rights movements, right? Mm. Which is, I'm not a men's rights activist. I enjoy it. Activist. I enjoy the conversation about
but
it.
But I am English.
But yes, yeah. But I spoke about disposable men, right? So people want equal outcome, but they only want equal outcome on the things that they want to choose. It's like, okay, well then we want this because there's no war at the moment, right? But men have been disposable for years. And she's like, what do you mean by that? I'm like, well, the army for one, right? That's an easy example. But two, let's say, for example, you and I were upstairs at the gym. There's a fire and they could only save one of us. Who do you think they're going to save?
Me.
They're going to save you. Yeah. Why? Because I'm disposable.
Mm.
That's the way it is.
Save the women and children.
Yep. Exactly right. And like the thing about it is that we don't want to have that conversation.
Mm.
But it's true. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's interesting. Like I look at, you know, I think women especially, there's so much emphasis on evolving us as a species, like whether it's, you know, professionally and personally and all that sort of stuff. You know, we can get IVF and have babies by ourselves. Like we don't need a man in a relationship to survive.
Mm.
So they become even more disposable.
Yeah.
And so I have, you know, we're concentrating on women, you know, if we go back to what we're talking about before, we're saying yes to women. So essentially I feel like we're saying no to men. Like, hang on, we're going to look after the women and we're going to focus on this area here. But I don't think we're actually realizing the impact that's having on men.
Mm. Yeah. So bashing the... This is how I see it. Bashing the masculine in me is bashing the feminine in you, right? And the reason why that is because you're going to have to pick up the masculine, right? And so you should have a healthy level of masculinity and a healthy level of femininity. What is that? I don't have the fucking idea. It's not constant, right? Yeah, good point. And so what it is supporting healthy masculinity and supporting healthy femininity in both of us. And so it's sort of like saying yes to that is often saying no to that. And that's where it's like, I have seen really good examples of feminism. I'm like, yeah, I completely agree with her. 100%. I think that should be addressed. I think the rape culture conversation, I think is difficult because it's painting a brush as a culture. However, I think, rape is bad. Like there shouldn't be a justification for it. We've got to look into the details, but you know, there's certain things around that, but it's just, yeah, equal outcome is just not attainable. That's going to be healthy.
Mm.
We've tried it in other countries, not we, but you know, earlier last century, it didn't work so well, right? We've seen the outcome of communism and things like that. So it's really challenging, but it's sort of like, I'm fortunate because I grew up with three older sisters and I grew up predominantly around my mum.
Mm.
And the, you know, you mentioned about the IVF thing, right? So men are even more disposable. We do not know. I think we do. I think some people do. But as a generation, or at least a culture right now, we don't understand how much damage an absent father, or at least an absent father figure, does for children.
Mm.
There's studies done that shows that when the father is present, kids actually develop more empathy, right? And so I actually shared on my Facebook today a podcast between Jordan Peterson and Warren Farrell.
Yeah.
And it was about the necessity of fathers.
Mm.
And I was like, oh, I'll listen to this. And it was a great podcast.
Yeah,
and cool. It really talked about, like, I mentioned it with my podcast with Al the other day, but, you know, like, even playing. And so often the...
Yeah, I heard that.
Yeah, the playing was, like, it's so crucial. But the father will go, no, you're not allowed to do that. And so he can actually install empathy. Install empathy in the child by the way that he actually parents the child. And so it's not that the female won't. It's them together, right? It's not this or that. And so it's like, can same-sex couples have kids? I'm not against that. There should, however, be both a feminine and a masculine role model within that.
Yeah.
You know, and I didn't realize how, like, I have a great relationship with my dad, but he wasn't there, and I had poor men as role models. That fucking affected me massively, way more than I thought. Right? And my poor mum, had to take on masculine energy. And that affected me even again.
Mm.
Yeah, it's interesting. And, like, I'm not a victim to that. It's like, oh, right, that's why I do that. Okay, well, I got to fucking open those couple of shadow doors and figure out what's going on with those demons and fight those dragons. And
I feel like you get to the point where you're like, that one's just going to stay closed just for a moment. Like, it's bursting, but I got to deal with these doors first and then we'll open this one.
Yeah, for sure. And like,
you enter the vortex.
Yeah. I mean, it's the suffering conversation again.
Suffering conversation?
Why we hold on to our suffering, because it's like, it's part of our identity. I said it earlier in the podcast. It's like, it's one of the last things that we want to let go of is our suffering.
Yeah. I feel like you choose to suffer. Yeah, like it's a deliberate choice.
Yeah. And sometimes it's subconscious. Mm. Mm. So I think it is subconscious for a lot of the time.
Mm.
But suffering is interesting. I spoke to Richard about this, and it's like, I used to think suffering was what the weak did.
Mm.
Now I understand it's what the weak avoid.
Mm.
But what I'm talking about is choosing to go through the suffering of training, maybe, or choosing to go through the suffering of dealing with the demons of your past.
Mm.
Like going through that, actually going through the suffering actually allows you to get on the other side of freedom. And so I think on the other side of suffering is freedom.
Oh, most definitely. And yeah, that's something that, you know, that resonates a lot with me and that I try to work with my clients. Like I had one client in today, bit of a shit day. I could have just gone, yep, let's do yoga and let's stretch and let's do something. I made a train a particular way. That first had a bit of resistance, and then I got a message afterwards going, that's exactly what I needed. She needed to break through that resistance, do a bit of hard work for herself. Mm. She'd been doing a lot of hard work for other people.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the outcome. So, yeah.
Mm. Yeah. And I think having someone to help like yourself in that situation is paramount.
Mm.
Right. I should know this. I should have it by me. It's like, what, know everything? 100%? Let's go back full circle to the conversation.
Mm.
You're 100% across everything in the whole entire world. You're not.
I was talking to a good friend a couple of days ago, and it's like, you kind of feel like when all the balls are up in the air, you just need to just kind of cement one and then everything kind of falls into place. But I don't think everything ever does fall into place. It's always like, okay, one, and then you're like, oh God, one's run off again. And then you put it back down. You're like, ah! And so, yeah, I think that's another reason why I don't believe that you'll ever get to the 100% because everything's moving. You know, in that conversation, we're like, I just feel like you just keep riding the wave. And you go through good times and then the wave hits and then you flow with it for a little bit and then you get dunked by another one. And I feel like life's just kind of constant like that. But when you get dunked, you kind of choose how you react to it. You just see it as another phase of something you have to deal with. And you're like, okay, we're going to deal through this now, but we'll come back up on top and we'll keep swimming a little bit until the next wave hits. It's not saying you sit there on your ass and wait for the next bad thing to happen or challenge to happen.
Yeah.
But it's just acknowledging that that's something that you can't avoid.
Yeah.
Especially if you want to do anything meaningful with your life. It's just something that you get better at dealing with and more resources you gather each time it happens.
Yeah. It's, I think it's pretty common nowadays to think that life should be good and I should be happy. It's like, you're not owed either one of those things.
Mm.
Like, no, life is neither good nor happy. Happiness is an emotion that we experience throughout life in certain periods of time.
Mm.
And good is basically a perception of a situation. And so the reason why I'm sort of bringing that up is because if I'm not happy, something's wrong with me.
Mm.
No. That's not true. And if it's not good, then it's bad. It's like, nope, no, that's not true either.
Okay.
Yep. It's just is what it is. And it doesn't mean
what you give energy to it.
Yeah. It doesn't mean that, like, you know, Boxing Day just gone. I was at the cricket and had some beers and with some really good friends and family. And, you know, it was a great day. That was a good day. I enjoyed that day. Doesn't mean I shouldn't call it good. Another day is like, oh, today was not bad. Today was challenging. It was emotionally challenging, or maybe it was physically challenging, or because I couldn't sleep last night because of whatever reason and so on and so forth. But it's you're not owed good and you're not owed happy. And my seminar today was on seasons of life. That was one of the things I spoke about. And so Claire Graves, who created Spiral Dynamics, talks about alpha, beta, gamma, delta, and alpha being summer, beta being autumn or fall, gamma being winter and delta being spring.
Mm.
And so the reason why I spoke about that is that if we are able to have the awareness when we're going into a beta stage, which is the autumn, we can somewhat batten down the hatches and get through a winter better than if we try to ignore it. If we're like, no, everything's fine. Everything's fine. I should be happy. Everything's fine. Everything's fine.
Stay up there in booty shorts and a singlet top.
And then all of a sudden, have a
bad day.
Yeah, all of a sudden you go, I'm really depressed. It's like, yeah, because you tried to avoid sadness.
Mm.
Instead of understanding what sadness was teaching you, you could have battened down for the winter, got through it and come out better in spring. But you tried to avoid it because you thought you're meant to be happy and you're not. It's not always the case. And so it's the seasons of life that we have to embrace. And when we embrace it, we learn to dance in the rain, so to speak.
Mm. And when you just said sadness, it reminded me, I can't remember, what the movie's called, but it's a kid's movie about the different emotions, and there's a little character called Sadness, and it's the cutest thing ever. But I remember watching that after doing my first seminar with Alice. I think she mentioned it. And there's a couple of other kids' movies that
are similar. Inside Out.
Yeah.
I haven't seen it yet.
Yeah, and it's Inside Out. You definitely should see it. Like, okay. Go watch cartoon movies. But you watch it, and it's a child's movie, but I feel like adults can definitely benefit from it because it kind of takes... It brings it down to a playful level, emotions, and you feel like you're relating to it, and you're like, oh, that is my sadness, and it's okay. And sadness is okay. Like, it's an important part of what makes you you. It's not something that you should avoid or once you see sadness, you don't want to kick it to the curb. It's really cute. but it's a really cool movie for that. I don't watch many movies, but apparently I do watch kids' movies.
I had to sit you down and watch Billy Madison.
I can't remember what went into that movie. I'm really bad with remembering things. It's something that I'm trying to work on, but still not.
Your type.
Yeah. Oh, really? Okay, cool. Then I just won't work on it.
Well, actually, the levels of integration get you to work on it, yeah.
Yeah. I downloaded a couple of apps that help me improve memory, like little drills you can do, like remembering numbers.
Right, okay.
Did it for a week and was like, this is not how I'm going to learn to remember stuff.
Then you forgot about it.
Fuck, my app.
Yeah, that's funny. Yeah. So, yeah, no, it's a common thing, I think, with type threes, to like, what's next, what's next, what's next, what's next. And so, which is really quite interesting. So, whereas actually type fours can sometimes be really in the past, and the type fours are more inclined to hold shame on their past. Unhealthy, the individualist.
I'd like to have room in the numbers and the things.
Yeah. So, that's okay. I say the types, but yeah, just ask me the actual names. So the individualist, if they're unhealthy, can sometimes, and I've met some, type fours that are strong type fours that are like, I'm like, dude, you're not your past. You're not your thoughts. And they're like, what do you mean? Like I they didn't realize that they hold shame. So 2, 3, 4s hold shame more than the other ones. And so the fours can, sometimes be a little bit too in the past. And they're in themselves, and that doesn't mean they understand it. They're just so in here. Doesn't mean they're really understanding what's going on, though.
Pull the curtain down.
Yeah. It's like, well, you don't know. You don't understand.
Yeah.
You don't know me. You don't know what I've been there. Off it goes on that. So yeah, it can be like that. Anyone can be like that. And there's also, like, levels of people go to different ones to integrate. So type 8, for example, which is the challenger, which I am. Type 8 and 7 are both aggressive, or assertive type, should I say. But yeah, type 8, 7 and 3. Sorry to keep you up. But type 8 can be quite outwardly aggressive, whereas a type 3 can be more passive. So,
I hate passive aggressive people. Sorry, I don't hate them, but just saying what's on my mind.
I'm going to hold my comment.
No, sure. No,
you'll be more unhealthy. You'll be more passive than you would.
Yeah, definitely. I definitely see it as a trait in myself, which is why I think I don't like it as much as I do, because I've realized there's really no need for it. Like, if you're passive aggressive, just talk about it. I'd much rather be someone be aggressive and like, okay, that's what I'm dealing with.
Yeah.
As opposed to someone being passive aggressive and going, okay, what do you need to talk about? It's nothing. Well, clearly there's something.
Yeah.
And we both get a lot out of you. You're talking about it right now.
Yeah. There can be a whole range of different variations of that. But yeah. So it's definitely, especially the people that don't think they're aggressive, passive aggressive is usually people that are like, oh, I'm not aggressive at all. But they will often be sarcastic and passive aggressive.
Or the subsequent behaviors be like, okay, yes, you are being like, you said it wasn't an issue, but clearly it's an issue because you're doing X, Y, Z.
Oh, no, that's fine. You go. Yeah, that's okay.
And then just don't talk to you for 3 days.
God. A variation of that. So, so understanding, for example, like a type A, which is the challenger, which I really do run a strong pattern of that. And unhealthy, that can get quite aggressive. But a healthy variation actually integrates to two, which they want to become a really healthy helper. And so they really build sort of communities and things like that to get people to help integrate themselves. And you've seen me before when I become sort of uncertain, unstable, I actually get really I've noticed this now, and sort of I can become aware of it now and sort of try and let it just pass, as opposed to actually letting it run me. But yeah, and you know, I definitely know that you've put up with me through periods of my life where I was probably unstable, in the sense of where the business was at or where my emotional health was at. And then it was easier for me to become aggressive. And when I say aggressive, it was never like fighting. I'd never physically aggressive. No, not at all. But it was definitely like, it's like, well, why is this happening like that though? I don't, and I didn't I thought that was a normal thing to do, but I realize now that that's not. That's just the way that I would.
Yeah, I think maybe a different way to say it would be you lacked empathy or compassion. It was.
Yeah, well, that's exactly what aggressive is, right? Yeah. It dehumanizes the other person. Mm. So what I would stop.
Situation.
Yeah, yep. And so, for example, and if I really sort of pull that apart, I'd look at you in this situation. Then I wouldn't be taking into account your emotional state, your feelings, what you contributed. I was like, push that aside. I'm angry and you should know about this and fix it, right? And that's an unhealthy type 8. Yeah. So, yeah, it's interesting stuff. I think that's why it's sort of seeing that and becoming aware of the emotions that allow me to sort of, that are going that way. It's like, okay, I'm angry. All right. Rather than displaying it, you know, I can still be angry and have a conversation with you because you still sit in vulnerability when you're angry.
Mm.
We lose vulnerability when we become aggressive. And so if I'm emotionally aware around my anger, I can still like, look, this is really upsetting me. I just want you to know that I'm sort of angry about this, but I want to be able to understand it because I think that's what's going on. Can you please explain it to me again? Right. And I can still sit in my anger and move through that without actually being aggressive.
Yeah, I think, you know, you said move through it. And I think it's worth important, like emotions just states. So you can choose how long you want to spend in that state and what the intensity of that state is. I'm a big believer in that.
Mm. Yeah.
And so with the aggressiveness, it's like, okay, cool. You can continue to be aggressive or you can decide you don't want to play in that space and go, what do I need to do to move through that?
Yeah, that's the key there is moving through it. A lot of people will try and resist it.
Mm.
Yeah. So
if they resist it, what happens?
That it shows up somewhere else. Mm. Yeah, whatever you resist persists. So that's where it's like, oh, I'm not aggressive. I feel aggression, but I'm not aggressive, but I'm not going to talk to you for 3 days.
Mm.
Like that's aggression, right? So like I hate negativity is another example. It's like, yeah, I bet. Yeah, it's, you're not negative about negativity at all.
Mm.
So whatever we resist persists as opposed to seeing it for what it was, what it is, and then, yeah. So I think that's quite fascinating as well. But that's learning more about the Enneagram and seeing how that unfolds allows me to first have the insight into myself and then go, okay. And if people are inquiring about themselves, then guide them through their levels of integration as well.
Mm.
So,
yeah, I think the aftercare is important. I think with any of this sort of stuff, and I guess it's the same with coaching as well, you kind of open up a can of worms. And I think it's, you know, not an ethical thing to do to go, okay, can's open, enjoy, see ya, bye. I think having someone there to support you through it, whether it's the same person or you go out and seek a mentor or something like that, but it's definitely any sort of journey you start. You know, if we talk about the hero's journey, you do meet mentors along the way. And I think, you know, whatever journey you're going to embark on, I think it's important that you recognize that going, you know, journeys are intended to have a mentor to help you through it. So seek one out, you know, don't be afraid to seek one out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's one of the most important things. It's like, I should know this. It's like, no, you shouldn't. Well actually, not even no, you shouldn't. Why should you?
It was like one of my colleagues is, apparently had inquiry from Centrelink about, you know, amount she was paid 4 years ago. And she's like, oh God, I don't have my receipts for that. And then someone was like, oh, but you need to keep your receipts for 7 years. And she's like, how was I supposed to know that?
Where?
Like, yeah.
Keep everything for 7 years.
At what point do you learn stuff? what stuff is meant to be common knowledge? What point is like, I think I learned how to change a tire on my car last year when I asked the NRMA guy came and helped me, and he's like, do you want to learn how to do it? I'm like, yeah, cool, of course. Didn't know how to change it before that.
Yeah.
Who the fuck taught me?
Well,
I didn't
Tommy's,
have to learn it.
Tommy's next door.
Yeah, exactly. And then have you saved me once? I think someone saved me once, but I was like, I haven't had to learn that skill, so I'm learning it now.
That's the skill. I mean, yeah, it's a skill you want to learn before you get there, right? But it's once again, it's
that's
like,
everything though, isn't it? Then
on some level. Yeah,
yeah,
for sure. I think
you kind of got to shortlist them.
I think I think that's on the shortlist because
on the genie lamp,
10:30 p.m. at night when you get a blown tire, like you don't want to learn how to do it then.
Yeah,
right. So it's sort of like that's on the shortlist for sure. But yeah, I get it. You're right. Like it's like I didn't know, and this is one of the things I used to get in trouble in my old work. It's like, oh fucking, and he was aggressive, 100%. He was aggressive, and he would blow me up, and I'm like, I didn't know. No one's told. I'm trying to just figure this shit out as I go along.
Mm.
And now I'm in trouble for trying to figure it out as I go along. You want me to like color in the lines. And then you look at understanding my personality types now. And it's like, yeah, okay, I'm done with this.
Yeah, you know? I think that's a challenge for any young or any growing or new organization is to recognize that everyone is going to be learning for a long time. Everyone's going to be learning about each other. Everyone's going to be learning about structures and systems. So those sorts of things are really important. Yeah, I guess I'm in the corporate world, so I see it a lot.
But yeah, absolutely.
It's been really interesting learning all this stuff and talking about it with you, then going, cool, I have this life where I can apply it. And then I also have a couple of other lives where, you know, it doesn't seamlessly integrate.
No, it's difficult because it's got to come from the top.
Mm.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Miffy, I think it's time to finish it there.
Mm.
Thank you very much for jumping on the podcast today.
Pleasure.
It was a...
Thanks for the chats.
Delicious tat. Tat?
Tat. Mm. Ooh, yeah. I want a tat. I don't know what of though. I wanted one for like 4 or 5 years.
Beard?
A beard.
Yeah.
A beard tat.
Yeah.
But I couldn't stroke it.
Good evening. Thank you very much. Until next time. Peace and pizza.
Oh God, that was all good.
We'll see you guys soon.